Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry will share dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Tim Dimoff. Tim is president of Sachs Consulting and Investigative Services Incorporated and is a recognized national expert in workplace issues and training, investigative services, and law enforcement private security personnel training. With 15 years as a police officer on the SWAT team and narcotics division, Tim brings firsthand experience to a variety of specialized programs for individuals and businesses. He has received the State of Ohio's Distinguished Law Enforcement Service Award and the Summit County Safety Council's Safety Citizen of the Year Award. Tim has written several books, including How to Tell If Your Kids Are Using Drugs and How to Identify a Substance Abuser. These books are sold nationally and have been translated into four foreign languages. Tim's professional affiliations include the State of Ohio and International Narcotic Associations, Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Association of Ohio, the National Association of Prevention Professionals and Advocates Incorporated, and the American Society for Industrial Security. Additionally, Mr. Dimoff is an executive board member for the Small Business Council, the Summit County Safety Council, and has lectured at Case Western Reserve University. He is also a member of Technical Advisory Services of America, a national expert witness service used by attorneys across the country. Today's tape will draw from Tim's many years of field experience to make us all more aware of the abuse of drugs and alcohol in the workplace and how to recognize it and handle the problem.
Not my company. If I had a nickel for every time I heard, not my company, I'd be a very rich man today. 10 to 15% of the American workforce arrives to work each day under some level of influence of alcohol and drugs. Many business owners and supervisors repeatedly say, not my company. I want to tell you that, yes, you should be thinking, yes, probably my company. And we need to know how to examine, to find, to discover, to confront, and to provide solutions to that dilemma. 10 to 15% of the Americans coming to work under the influence is way too many. And it is only with an aggressive and organized plan can you solve those solutions. My company, Sachs, has researched and we have revealed there are corporate legal successes hinges on five factors. One, quality of people hired. Quality of people hired also includes the process of hiring. And part of that process is drug testing. No company in America should hire anybody without first drug testing them. Secondly, the physical security of the work environment becomes a crucial element for different companies. Thirdly, thoroughly trained supervisors. How are you going to recognize this problem? How are you going to deal with it? And how are you going to have consistent solutions without training the supervisors? Four, a very written, concise, and thorough company policy. Specifically, we're talking drug and alcohol policies for your companies. These policies can't be a paragraph or a half a page. They need to be a thorough, written company policy. And fifth, we need to get all locations, all shifts, and all supervisors working from the same page. Once again, we need to be organized. We need to be consistent. Statistics back up my theory. Listen to a couple of these statistics and see what the odds are for your company. 5,000 people. 5,000 people try cocaine for the first time every day in the United States who have never touched it before. We have 5,000 new experimenters to cocaine every single day. Add the element of crack cocaine, which is highly addictive, and we have a serious problem. The next statistic is very alarming. 72%. 72% of the total world-produced illegal drugs, your cocaines, your heroines, your opiates, your hash, just the illegal drugs, 72% is bought and consumed just in the United States. We are consuming almost three-quarters of the total world-produced illegal drugs. Cocaine is one of the most devious and threatening drugs out there because of its high addictive powers. Every day, people are looking for solutions to their cocaine addiction. There's a 1-800 number that you can call for help if you want to stop the addiction process for cocaine. This 1-800 number does not ask you for your name. It only directs you to where you can get help. But along with that direction of help, they do ask a few questions, which I find very, very interesting. Information from the cocaine hotline is that 75% of the callers that call in state that they use cocaine on the job. 75% are using the drug on the job. And 64% of those callers are stating that they use the cocaine drug regularly on the job. The things you see on TV about the drug user being the poor person sitting on a street corner, some of that may be true. But remember, it takes money to buy drugs. And either people steal it, obviously our crime has gone up with drug use. But more than that, drug users are employed, and they're working for every one of us. You need to understand that, you need to believe in it, and you need to recognize it before you can find solutions. But I can't sit here and tell you that drugs are our biggest problem when realistically, alcohol is the number one problem. Drugs are up there. That alcohol is somewhere between 15 to 20 times more serious problem. And the reasons are very simple. Alcohol is legal to obtain. Workers can obtain alcohol everywhere they go. Stores, gas stations, convenience stores. Just about everywhere they go now, they can stop and buy alcohol legally. And it doesn't matter whether they're going from one job to the next. Alcohol is legal, and it's readily available. Interesting, two out of three Americans in the United States drink. And many drink very sensibly and sociably. Others don't. But two out of three Americans drink. Interesting, though, just take 10% of that group. Just take 10% of that two out of three. And that 10% by itself consumes half the nation's beer, wine, and liquor. That's exactly what I said. 10% of all drinkers in the United States consume half the nation's beer, wine, and liquor. And it's that 10% that we've got to be concerned with. And the majority of that 10% are definitely employed. And once again, accessible to them at many locations is liquor, while they're working for you and me. When dealing with identifying a drug or alcohol problem, many employers need to be concerned about the legal ramifications. And I've heard this several times. I don't want to be sued. What can I do? But then again, I want to do something. What should I do? Well, if you look at the legal end of it, and you examine what you need to do and what you should do, you can stay within the parameters of the laws and legislation throughout the United States, and you can do some things. But you need to be aware of certain aspects when you're confronting it and when you're documenting it and when you're doing any type of discipline or termination that is connected to it. If you look at the federal handicap law, if you take into account ADA, Americans with Disability Act, you must focus on one aspect to stay within the parameters. Handicap and ADA do not apply. I repeat, they do not apply to any employee who is an alcoholic or drug abuser whose current use of alcohol and drugs prevents such individual from performing the duties of their job. Now understand, it's their current drug or alcohol use that prevents them from performing the duties of their job. Secondly, any employee whose employment and drug and alcohol use interferes or is a direct threat to the property or safety of themselves or others does not fall under handicap, federal laws, court cases, and the Americans with Disability Act. This is a general rule of thumb. And understand that you as an employer or supervisor, you need to focus on the employee and if that drug and alcohol use or abuse is interfering with their current employment, working, relationship, and activities for your company. Secondly, if it is interfering with the safety of themselves or others. In either case, if it interferes with their job duties or safety, you cannot fall under some of these legal and federal and other local type legislation that many employers are concerned about. With that in mind, I'll emphasize to you that many employers don't understand that, are not aware of it, and are making accusations and documentations outside those parameters. Let me summarize. Anytime you're confronting an employee about any issue, you should narrow it down to conversation and documentation around two simple aspects. One, work performance. Two, safety. This is the safety net you need to follow. An example, someone comes into work and they're blatantly, in your opinion, under the influence. It's not that you're going to make a judgment call of they might be under the influence, they're drunk, they're high, they're inebriated. You're not a doctor, you're not a nurse, you're not a expert of who is under the influence. But that person coming to work who is bumbling and stumbling, they are unable to perform their duties for your company. They are unable to do their job. And they are also a safety risk to themselves potentially and a safety risk to others. That is what you need to document. They were unable to perform their job. They were a safety risk to themselves and others. Therefore, you make a safe assumption that potentially they might be under the influence. And notice how I say they might be. You can never say for sure. A good example is, let's say you have someone who is a epileptic and they forget to take their seizure medicine. And they exemplify many of the same characteristics of someone who may be under influence. You're still confronting and documenting the fact that they're unable to do their job and they may be a safety risk to themselves or others, regardless of whether it was alcohol or drugs or the failure to take medication. Under that type of confrontation between you and that employee and that documentation, you're still in a safety net. So let me emphasize again, you as the owner and all supervisors need to document and confront and have conversation only in the areas of work performance and safety. Work performance and safety, work performance and safety. This is the golden rule for staying within the parameters of legal profession, for staying out of court, and for continuing to be very objective and fair to the employee. And you definitely want to have all those areas covered. Let's talk about some of the signs of deteriorating work performance. These patterns or signs that I'm going to be talking to you about, these are some of the more obvious or maybe more hot items or things that you would want to be able to document and that you should document. And these are also some of the more common symptoms or aspects that you should be looking for. And you'll notice that these are going to be job-related and or safety-related, staying on track with job performance and safety. Inconsistency of quality of work. Now, you may have workers that have been with you for X amount of months or years. And these workers may have had many years or months of good work performance. And then all of a sudden, you're having problems. And the best way to describe it is, usually someone involved in a drug or alcohol abuse situation, their pattern of work performance and efficiency is like peaks and valleys. It goes up and down, and it's more than just a little bit of a change. We're all human. We all fluctuate a little bit on our work performance, but not everybody fluctuates on peaks and valleys, meaning you have a worker who's really good in the morning, but then in the afternoon, their work performance is pathetic or not good or not safety conscious. Maybe at lunch they've got a few drinks or popped a few pills or smoked some marijuana. Or you have workers that are good for weeks at a time, and then they have a bad streak of weeks. Or good for months, and then have a bad period of months. Or good for months and have a bad week or two. Some workers may have mornings where their work performance and safety is questionable. And then in the afternoon, it's better. Maybe because they got high or drank right before they came to work, and by the afternoon, it's worn off. Look for peaks and valleys of type of work and safety attitude. That's a very big clue. Inconsistency of that work, inconsistency of the quality of work. Basically, those high and low periods are extreme. Drugs and alcohol definitely affect the mental. Poor judgment, more mistakes than usual, and general carelessness. And remember, we're not talking about someone that these type of characteristics once in a while. We're talking about someone with relative consistency. This happens more than once or twice. It happens somewhat often, but it keeps happening off and on. A person that has a lapse in concentration, many drugs and alcohol can cause lapse in concentration. They have difficulty recalling instructions. You just explain something to them, and it's almost like you never talk to them. Other problems can come into play here. They may even insist that you didn't even explain it to them yesterday or a week ago or a month ago or even an hour ago. Those are something called conscious blackouts. Conscious blackouts can happen to abusers. They actually are not out. They're mentally, their recall, their training, their memory is out while they're still physically awake and functioning. And I can give you an example of that. An individual who goes out to a bar and he's drinking at night. And he drives home. And the next morning, the first thing he does is look out the window to see if his car's in the driveway. He never remembers how he drove that car from the bar to the home. He has no recollection. But in fact, he actually got in that car and drove it home. His body was consciously awake, and he went through the motions, but he has a total blackout. Workers can do that too, that abuse drugs. And that is why sometimes they'll vehemently argue with you that they were never informed. Using more time to complete work mistakes. Using more time to complete work or making those mistakes. Good workers consistently give you good performance. But when they start using more time and they start to have and experience more mistakes, you can see the pattern and where it's going. Workers that miss deadlines. Once in a while, we all miss deadlines. But once again, how about that worker that misses deadlines on almost a regular basis? And then add to the fact that it's not that big of a deal to them, because substance abuse does affect attitudes. Other workers who are abusing may have increased difficulty in handling complex situations. Drugs and alcohol definitely affect that type of ability. They are not able to handle complex or multitask type of work. Now, take that worker that's been working for you for X amount of months or years. And a big advantage you have is comparison. Maybe for X amount of months or years, you never had those problems. And now all of a sudden, you're having those problems and several others. If you have the ability to compare a worker to their previous work performance and you see a drastic difference, that is a strong indication that something else is going on in their lives. Now let's jump to absenteeism. Acceleration of absenteeism, tardiness, especially Mondays, Fridays, before and after holidays. Those are all strong clues. And it's pretty obvious. Monday morning, they can't get up, hangovers. Paydays, they're anxious to get out of there because they have money in their pocket and they want to go to the bar or they want to go and buy some drugs. Holiday areas, they're having trouble rebounding back from a couple days of what they call partying, but maybe really should be called abusing. Those are some of the stronger clues. We all have absenteeism systems, accountability. Look at your absenteeism. Track it. You've already got that information. Use it to your advantage. Look and see what days they're taking off. Look and see what days they're tardy, what days they're absent. Also, look at your time elements. Do you have workers that are consistently coming back late from lunch? Remember, drugs and alcohol distort time. What they used to think they could do in 20 minutes, they now firmly believe they can do in 10 minutes. That's why they're late consistently. The time disorientation. They start to believe that they can cut their time in half, and they consistently start to be late on a semi-regular basis. Frequent unreported absences later explained as emergencies. Your basic worker should not have numerous emergencies coming up at home and other reasons. Once in a while, we all have emergencies. But when you start to see the excuses being repeated. I had one company where an individual on payday, it was always on payday, had emergencies come up all the time. The one day his kid fell off the monkey bars and supposedly was in the hospital. One day his mother was extremely sick. The next time his wife was very sick and he needed to go home. And the list went on and on and on until one day they called me and I told them they need to check the emergencies out. And the question is, I as an employer, do I have the right to verify information? My answer was simple. Most companies, if you're off, say, 3 or more days, have a policy you need to bring in a doctor's excuse. If you're off on a funeral, you need to bring in a copy of the funeral announcement in. And you're doing exactly the same thing. You're verifying that emergency or that time off. So why not verify any other type, especially if it becomes repeated? Isn't that job related? Aren't they leaving a job site, causing someone else to have to cover, causing the company maybe to have to pay overtime, causing the company flow to stop, delaying a customer or client service? Yes, it's job related. And yes, you have the ability and the right to check those stories out, especially when they start to repeat themselves. Leaving work area more than necessary. If you have set jobs and they're at a certain location or in a certain building, and that worker is leaving the job site more than the norm, and everybody knows what the norm is for their own company, and not only are they leaving the job site more than regular, it's the employee that leaves that job site and you can't find them. That's the employee you better look for. That employee that leaves the job site at a certain building and you can't find them, and no one else can, And then, boom, you turn around, and the work fairy made him reappear. And the question in your mind is, where was he? Where could he have gone? And you have that gut feeling that something ain't right. Follow your gut feelings. Gut feelings for supervisors and owners are good barometers of work performance and problems that may be brewing. Requesting to work, requesting to leave the work area early for various reasons goes right along with those emergency type things. Make sure you examine and track time, absences, tardiness, return from jobs. You send people on errands and you can know roughly how long it should take. And it takes twice as long. Simple. Confront the employee when they return. Immediately confront them and ask them, where were you? What took you so long? If you start to hear the uhs and ums and no answer, you better start looking a little closer. Because somebody that went somewhere on an errand or a work assignment and knows exactly where they were and what they did has no problem quickly giving you an answer. So those that have trouble answering or hem-haw around need to look a little closer. Speaking of absenteeisms and tracking, we had a company and the individual didn't feel that his company had a serious drug or alcohol problem. I asked him if we could examine his absenteeism and his tardy system. And I asked him if he required written excuses. And he said, yeah. So my staff and I, we examined all the absenteeisms. And one individual for this company had requested more than 3 days off 4 different times. 4 different times in 1 year because his grandmother died. Now I ask you, how many grandmothers are we allotting to each employee? Once I brought that to his attention, it hit him like a cold water to the face. His first reaction was, must be misunderstanding. Looking further into that, we found out, no, that's exactly what happened. He submitted 4 times that his grandmother had died. But this company did not have a requirement to bring in a copy of the obituary. Looking further into this one individual, we found out he had one of the highest absenteeism rates. We found out that there were several complaints against him. We found out he was once in a while on Monday morning, can't make it. Friday payday, leave early. And the list went on, and the profile fit. There was no doubt in my mind that this person was involved in some type of drug or alcohol abuse. Another area you want to look at is accidents. Are some employees taking needless risks? Is there a disregard for safety of themselves and others? And are they experiencing a higher than average accident rate on a job? Now, once again, this is easy to track. You keep statistics and information on your accidents. Look at it. Compare it. Summarize it. Who's having all the accidents? Is there a certain individual or individuals that are having the majority of the accidents? Compare employees to other employees. Do you have employees that don't have any accidents at all? And you have others that have several? Look at the ones that have several accidents. Start to examine their absenteeism. Start to look at their files, their relationship with coworkers, supervisors, clients. It's not unusual that when you see one area that is deficient, you'll find other areas are deficient, and that can only support more focus to that individual's need to have some type of intervention. Another category is relationships to others on the job. Now remember, when you indulge in abusing alcohol or drugs, certain things physically go on and mentally and emotionally. One of these areas is relationships with others. Do you have employees that are overreaction to real or imagined criticisms? Drugs and alcohol just exacerbate all the emotions. You're talking to them about corrective behavior, and it's a minor issue, maybe. They take it as a major issue. They take it as a personal insult. They take it as you're picking on them. They accuse you. They threaten you. And you'll find out you're not going to be the only one. They're probably intimidating other employees or clients, customers, vendors. Start to examine those other areas. Absenteeism, attitude, accidents, quality, consistency of work. You'll see other areas affected. But they are definitely overreaction to real or imagined criticism. They may become very avoiding and withdrawing from peers and supervisors. They may distance themselves from you or others. They might even see you walking towards them and they'll do a 180-degree turn and go another direction just to avoid coming near you. You may be walking by them while they're talking with someone else and they may stop talking. They may wait till you're way by them. Besides the paranoia, they don't want you to hear what they're saying. When you start getting complaints from coworkers, reference other workers, and it's more than the minimal stuff, and it's from several coworkers, usually you've got an attitude problem, an emotion problem, and you probably will see other areas that need to be addressed. But once coworkers start complaining and you have several coworkers, you really need to examine that person closer. And how about that worker that wants to borrow money from fellow employees? Not only does he or she borrow money from one employee, but it'll be from several employees. And guess what? Most times they don't even pay him back, and they just move from one to the next. Oh, yeah. They're going to come to you, too. Cash advance. And you're going to cash advance their substance abuse on a regular basis because they don't have the ability to budget. They don't have the ability, but in all honesty, they're not in control. One thing drugs and alcohol do, they take away the individual's control. Cash advances are going to become regular more often, and they're going to request greater quantity of money in the long run. And they're going to tell you, hey, I pay you back. And they're also going to be borrowing from employees. One day it's going to be more than that. And they're going to tell you how they're refinancing their house and their credit cards are maxed out. And they'll blame it on other people, their spouse, their kids, their mom, their dad, the weather, the alignment of the stars and the planets. But it'll never accuse themselves of not doing it. Because you must understand, the substance abuser never does anything wrong. It's everybody else and everything else in the world. They've got this John Wayne Superman syndrome. Usually when employees are having problems with drug and alcohol abuse, you're going to hear about or they may experience other problems too, such as separation, divorce, child discipline problems, financial stress, suicides. You're going to hear them all. They're going to bring their luggage to work. But remember one thing, especially in a relationship. The relationship between a husband and wife doesn't deteriorate first and drives them to drinking or using drugs. It's quite the opposite. The drug and alcohol abuse happens first, and because of it, the breakdown in the relationship is second and a result of that abuse. And many, many people misunderstand that. And they will bring that luggage to work, as I said before. Then you're going to have workers that don't like their job, want to change their job, want to learn more, want to go here, want to do this. They're never happy. They're never satisfied. They'll blame it on everything. And you'll give them a change in job. You'll put them with a different person or persons. You'll give them a different location. You'll do all sorts of changes. But guess what? In a relatively short time, even that doesn't help. Once again, remember, they're not in control. And then all those nice physical signs that can happen. Irritable, suspicious, complaining about others. They're just emotionally unsteady. And when you start to see complaining about others and other things and blaming everything and everyone else, that is a serious sign. You see mood changes. Remember, up and down, extremes. Not only with their work performance, but with their personality. Withdrawn. Also, how about that worker that always on the phone, cellular phone, pay phones, company phones? How about that worker that is getting a lot of pages outside the company? That's work performance. That's pulling them away from their job. They also may be lining up their next drug buy, alcohol stop, lots of other things. Look for all these type of symptoms. They're all very important. But remember, you'll have these physical, emotional, psychological, work performance, and safety. We're not just looking for one or two of these. You're looking for several of these. And when you start to see a couple of these, look in other areas and start to examine. That'll truly tell you if you've got somebody who works for you, an employee, who's involved in a drug or alcohol situation. And these situations cross all lines, all genders, all religions. Look thoroughly and look completely. Examine all areas. Get feedback from people working with them or working that they work for or around. Be concise. And document, document, document all of these aspects. Not once did you hear me say, and therefore you must be drunk, high, or inebriated, or have a substance abuse problem. I'm going back to my original golden statement. Look for, document, work performance, and lack of safety. Once you have this documentation down, you now have the ability to confront the employee. And exactly how you do that is my next area that I want to get into. How are you going to confront the employee with his or her drug or alcohol problem? And you can't tell them it's a problem. You can only point out the work performance and safety deficiencies. And then you can say, if there is a problem, and I don't know if there is, maybe counseling or an assessment. And hopefully your company has a range for an 800 number they can call or a local counseling service confidentially that you can refer them to for if there is a problem and for an assessment. But let's back up a minute. You now know some of the key points of identifying it. You want to confront it, but you need a policy. Basically, as I said earlier, you need a thorough drug and alcohol company policy. A paragraph or two is not going to suffice in today's litigation world. Seek out those experts that can develop a policy. That policy's got to say when you're going to test, how you're going to test, how many, when the circumstances are, what happens if they're positive, who pays for it. All those need to be answered. And once you have a policy, you need to have each employee sign to the effect, and you need to give them a copy of that policy. And once you give a copy of it, you need to explain it to them. And they should be signing a piece of paper that says specifically that they have received a copy of the company drug and alcohol policy statement, that they have read the drug and alcohol policy and or have been informed of its content. And thirdly, they agree to abide by the company drug and alcohol policy in all respects. They should sign it and date it, and you should witness it. Now, you might say, hey, I've got people that aren't going to sign this. And that's okay. You don't need to argue with them. If you incorporate a company-wide policy, whether the employee signs it or not, it's part of the company, and they have to abide by it. Now, to protect yourself a little bit, if you have someone that refuses to sign, make sure you explain the policy thoroughly in front of and with another supervisor or co-owner. And if they still refuse, that's fine. Just at the bottom of the paper, mark refuse to sign, and have two supervisors, owners, whatever, sign to the fact that he refused. But you're still acknowledging that they received a copy and they were explained its contents. Once that happens, that employee is obliged to follow those guidelines. No need to argue. Move on to the next issue. So get your policies, get your signature pages, put them in the files of those each individual of the employee, and move to the next one. You have a clear understanding of work performance and safety and how it relates to all these problems. Confront the individual. Take 10 minutes and sit down with that individual, eyeball to eyeball, in confidence, and talk to that individual and inform that individual of certain things. What are we going to focus on? The same thing that I've been stressing throughout this talk. Talk to that individual about, today we're here to talk about your job performance. Today we're here to talk about areas of needed job performance improvement. Today we're here specifically to talk about, and then list it, absenteeism, relationships with coworkers, complaints from clients or customers. You're not wearing glasses in the safety areas or when using tools or this or that. Violation of company policies, manuals, guidelines. Specific. Give them the specifics. Page, paragraph, area, topics they're violating. Go right down the line. And while you're doing this eyeball to eyeball, make sure you're writing it or already have it written down in front of you on a piece of paper. Once you inform this employee of those areas, and remember they're all job and safety related, ask the employee to sign it, acknowledging that you had the meeting. The employee doesn't even have to agree with you. But the bottom line is, you want to take that opportunity to explain to that employee and then offer that employee the opportunity to sign to the effect that you did meet and that you did discuss these topics. Now, if that employee signs that paper, basically your one-on-one confidential meeting is over. If you suspect there may be a problem before you let them go, you may want to require them to see an assessment center. Now, what's the assessment center doing? You simply explain. The assessment center is a group or an individual who is a professional who is going to talk to you and basically assess if there is a problem, what the problem is, and if there is a problem, a solution to that problem, to getting some help. And clearly explain to them that it's not your job, nor are you trained to assess problems. But you definitely see work performance and safety issues here that concern you. And encourage and ask them to go for this assessment and arrange for it. Once that assessment is done, that assessment is going to tell that individual the areas they need to work on, far as treatment goes. In your company, with your policy, part of it is going to be that once you go to this assessment, you need to follow the guidelines and the suggestions prescribed. If they aren't willing to follow those guidelines, then you'll have to seriously consider termination. But once again, go back to your policy. What does your policy say? Does your policy say you must follow the assessment's advice? Most policies do state that. Why? Because you owe a duty of safety to yourself, to that employee, to other employees, vendors, customers, and anybody that has contact with them. You're in a catch-22. That is why you want to meet with that employee. You want to encourage and guide them to get help. And that is why you want to tie it into work performance and safety. If that employee refuses to get assistance, help, treatment after that, then you're going to have to make a decision as a company beforehand in your policy to terminate that employee. Because to continue to let that employee work for you after you have documented work performance and safety issues, after a professional, objective professional that is, has recommended they get help by participating in a treatment program, and that individual employee refuses, you have a greater liability by allowing that employee to come back into the workplace without corrective treatment. Reassess exactly where you are in that area today and get some professional guidance and help to dot all those I's and to cross all those T's so you have a set pattern of response that is fair to all employees. And if you notice, this system that I'm recommending is not a system to terminate employees, but it is a system to salvage the employee and also to help employees that potentially have substance abuse or other problems to get help, to stay in the workplace, and to make their lives, their families, their environment, and themselves a better product. A question that comes up many times from employers is, what about the person that does come to work and is one of those blatant, in their opinion, obvious, probably under the influence? And that's a good question. How do you handle that? It's very simple. Even though you may be 100% convinced they're under the influence, once again, I'll stress you're not a doctor, nurse, or an expert in that area. Here's what you simply do. When you see that kind of action, document the fact that obviously they weren't able to perform their job. They were a safety risk to themselves and others. In addition to that, you want to physically describe what you see. How's their walking? Unsteady, swaying, falling, holding on? How's their standing? How's their balance? How's their walking and turning? Do they hold on to things? What's their speech like? What do they say? Slurred, mumbling, whispering, gets loud, gets soft. What are their actions? Describe physically what you see. And then end it there. The only other thing you can say in that type of situation is, you suspected that they might or they may be under the influence. And then physically describe it. Do not state they were definitely under the influence. All you must do is physically describe it, tie it into work performance and safety, and that is an accurate and the best way to document those situations. One last point. Anytime you have an employee who you feel may be under the influence, do not send them home. Do not send them anywhere. If you have a drug testing program for your company, which I'm going to talk about here in a minute, take them. Once you have suspicion that they're under the influence, do not send them anywhere. That is a liability for your company. Take them. Have a cab take them. Have a family member pick them up. But do not tell them to drive home or over to the testing facility. Let's review briefly what some options are for you for drug testing and alcohol testing. First, applicant testing. Basically, on applicant testing, you're going to only do drug testing. There's some confusion on applicant testing. Basically, you can test all applicants. Now, if you get in the habit of testing everybody that comes through the door or files an application, you're going to be costly. So when you start to narrow it down, send those that are some of your finalists. And don't tell them ahead of time when you're going to have the drug test, or you might as well throw your money out the door. Many companies are advertising in their ads or their classified ads that we drug test all applicants. I don't think that's a bad idea, because I'm experiencing with my clients in the vicinity of a 25 to 35% decline in applications just from including that one sentence, we drug test all applicants. How much money does that represent? Less phone calls, less applications, less interviews. Drug testing is a great idea for applicants. Once you narrow it down, send them to be drug tested. If they test positive, pull them from consideration and stipulate that they can come back in 6 months, or if they show proof of a rehabilitation, they can come back and apply. You don't want to say they're banned forever from reapplying just because of a positive drug test. You could get into some legal hassles over that. Let's move to current employees. Current employees, many of the industry, are doing what they call for-cause suspicion testing. That means if you as an owner or supervisor receive some basic training and education on identifying potential employees with a drug or alcohol problem, based on your experience and specific training, you can incorporate a for-cause testing. And based on that training and experience, certain situations that you document that are work performance and safety related, you can ask that employee to get a drug test. And you can ask that current employee to get an alcohol test. The second area for current employees, which many of the industries do, and I will say probably most of the industries with a drug and alcohol testing program, is something they call post-accident testing. Post-accident testing is simply this. Someone's involved in an accident at the work site that generally requires medical attention away from the work site, going to the hospital, emergency room, trauma center. They are automatically and must get a drug and alcohol test. What this does is eliminates the cut the finger or the splinter or a twisted ankle at the job site, but they don't need to go get help. It cuts out the small injury type of things. We're looking for accidents that require medical attention away from the work site. That's called post-accident testing. And then the last area for current employees, which is optional, is random testing. Many companies today are being involved in random selection testing. Basically, an outside source has all the Social Security numbers of the employees, and they randomly pick. And you can set the parameters for the random testing. You can say X amount of employees every Monday, X amount of employees every month, X amount of employees every quarter, every half a year, or once a year. The only requirement in random testing is that everybody, including you, the owners, all supervision, from top to bottom, everybody is included in the pool in random testing. Simply put, the industries and professions that are incorporating random testing are having a definite significant decrease in all the areas affected: absenteeism, accidents, claims, healthcare costs, etc. Not only are those results coming from random testing, but they're coming as a result of a total drug and alcohol policy, supervisory training, complemented with a drug and alcohol testing program. In conclusion, remember, work performance and safety. Talk about it, document it, confront it. It's your backbone to a strong company policy program. Remember, alcohol and drugs cause many problems. Alcohol by itself is causing 40% of the fatalities and 47% of the injuries in industry across the United States. This statistic comes from occupational medicine. And remember, drug and alcohol abusers are employed. In fact, Statistics say approximately 62% of the current substance abusers are employed. I want to end on a positive note. I worked with a company, and through the program, we identified someone that had both an alcohol and drug problem. The person was confronted and reluctantly went to treatment because the job was on the line. To make a long story short, when he got out of treatment, he went home, he came back to work, he was a different person. 2 weeks after treatment, I got a phone call, and he said, Tim, I want to thank you and thank the program, and I wanted to thank my company, because he said 2 weeks after he was out of treatment, his six-year-old son tugged on his coat, looked up at his dad, and said, I like my new dad. That's what we're after. Thank you.
We hope this edition of the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month has given you many new ideas to help you run your company more effectively. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.